So I'm Mike Benkovich, and you're listening to Bites by MSDN. I'm here with Richard Campbell. I'm interviewing the interviewer. It's going to be kind of fun.
Hey, it's interesting to have, you know, it's easy to ask the questions, but something coming up with the answers sometimes can be a challenge.
Coming up with the answers. So you're a hardware guy, and you've been talking, we were talking about doing the parallel stuff. Tell me what your thoughts are on that.
I've been a geek for a long time now. You were asking me about my first computer before we started the show here. It was a TRS-80. That was like 1977. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we've gone through a lot of evolutions. And back then, processors were 1 megahertz.
Right.
And
8K of memory was a lot.
Yeah. My first one was 4K of memory. Like, just, you know, and 3 error messages. What, how, and sorry.
Yeah.
We didn't really need more than that. And obviously, everything's grown. But there's been a big shift in the past couple of years. You know, the P4... The Pentium and the P4 were the processors that sort of hit the wall, where Intel realized we just can't. 4 gigahertz was about as fast as you could go before you got into these weird problems with
the flux and the force.
Yeah, it's very quantum at that point.
Right.
I mean, the speed of light becomes an issue, and so they actually slowed processors back down. I mean, we've been below 4 ever since, but the number of cores started growing dramatically. Many more cores. And today, I mean, here we are at TechEd in June of 2010, and AMD is shipping a 12-core processor. So, I mean, 12 cores in one die. So you don't need a complicated, like, server motherboards will have, you know, 4, 6, 8 processor bays in them, much more complex board. But regular desktop board with one chip in it, and that's 12 cores. And so now you start thinking about what that's going to do over the next few years. So 2007... Intel released an 80-core processor as an experimental processor for folks to start addressing parallelism. So here was an opportunity to have 80 cores on a die. It was a research-level processor. And they said this processor will be manufactured by 2012. They've now discontinued that processor because they're going to be manufacturing processors with 256 cores by 2012. So that's 2 years from now.
Kind of changes the way that we think about software.
It's really nutty if you think about how, you know, what that actually implies. Because a programmer, if you're going to use the word create thread and actually spin up threads for each of your tasks, you're good. You know, most developers, I think, can handle the idea of I have a foreground thread, I have a background thread, right? Maybe I kick off a couple of asynchronous cycles that'll be on their own threads, but that's about it. So 2-4 cores at the most, and even then, you know, you're largely dependent on a primary thread. And you're already seeing in .NET 4.0, we're getting away from that model. You know, I interviewed Stephen Taub a while back on .NET Rocks, and he was the guy who said, you know, if you say create thread, you failed.
Right.
Like, let the language, let the tooling deal with the threading model. You say as parallel, or you use P-Link, and the multi-threaded behavior starts up. But even then, 256 cores.
That is. I mean, when you start thinking about being able to spin up one core, now you need to really change the way you think about software almost. I mean, when you think about parallel processing, you're almost thinking worker and splitting things up.
And And if you really want to get into that many threads running at once, you're not talking about a dominant thread. Now, you can go down the supercomputing path. The supercomputing path says there are certain problems, you know, like dynamic flow problems where I can naturally decompose the problem into many, many simultaneously executing units, execute them all at once, and then recompose them into a solution. And we've been doing that for a long time. Just ask the guys from Cray. You know, those are, but there's only a certain number of problems that are like that. This is a different situation again. We're now thinking about routine parallelism anytime you can isolate things. Now, the issue we're running into more, I think, more than anything is we made decisions back in the 80s about how we write programs that were dependent on this idea of a single core that goes really fast.
Right.
And that really was object orientation. Object orientation lends itself to the singleton. It's casual with memory. It tends to allocate a chunk of memory for that object and manipulate that memory constantly, which works great if there's only one path of execution. But as soon as we have many paths of execution, that's a big problem. Now you're constantly defending the object. Right? You're setting locks in place. You're setting mutexes in place to defend the object. The model's wrong for massive parallelism. It doesn't work that way. We actually need to move over to a different style of development. And it's a style of development that exists. It just hasn't been important until recently. It's essentially functional programming. It's this idea that everything is a function, that it has a discrete area of memory that is not changed, that it is naturally immutable. That when you pass a reference to that function, it's a separate copy. And so that naturally lends itself to massive parallel execution. So languages like F-sharp right. and the beginning of the tooling like the parallel task library and so forth are starting to hint at what that will look like. Mm-hmm. I think there's more to come and extensively. I think the operating system needs to change. I'm hoping the mm-hmm. Windows 8 guys, and I expect they are, that's a yeah. smart bunch of guys, are yeah. thinking seriously about what the next version of Windows is going to do mm-hmm. to utilize what looks like a heck of a lot of cores by the time that product ships.
Well, it's almost like Azure. You've got the worker processes mm-hmm. versus the user interface, you know, the web roles. You know, I mean, that's almost kind of starting to think that way.
Yeah, we're moving into that declarative model of I want mm-hmm. to define a role that is naturally discrete and atomic so that mm-hmm. I can spread it across multiple instances. Mm-hmm. But really, we've understood this problem for quite a while in the server space. I've scaled right. lots of websites, and that's been our job. Mm-hmm. But as you start thinking in context of a desktop machine mm-hmm. doing that, it's mm-hmm. a very different world. And yeah. We're still at the very early stages of how that's going to look.
It's going to be an interesting thing to dive into.
It's going to be very fun.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, thank you for listening. Richard, thank you for coming out.
My pleasure.
It's been a pleasure to have you.